You like to watch new stuff, right? Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time. Like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's all new, and it's streaming now on Hulu.
And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
I'm Louis Fertel.
My name is Aida Osman.
And it's done. Quibi is over.
I want to say finally, but everybody knows how I feel about that streaming service. It's a funeral service now.
It has been on my mind, like, why it was such an obvious flop. I think something that goes underrated about Quibi is that it wanted to be everything for everyone in terms of content. It was sort of like if YouTube had one video in every genre, you know, like if you love game shows, there was one of those. If you love whatever, Chrissy Teigen, there was one Chrissy Teigen video, basically.
Mm-hmm. My biggest regret is not getting a cut of the Quibi money, the quibillion dollars they were giving out to comedians and writers. And, you know, that's their fault for not giving us more gay shows. They gave us a bunch of, like, Migos shopping for cars.
Well, yes, Aida, while you were busy running your mouth, sweetie, I was running to the bank cashing a Quibi check.
It's odd to me. I think that, like, a big flaw of it too was everybody thinks that we want to watch TV on our smartphones, and I'm not trying to look at that tiny little screen. I paid money for this flat screen. It's taking up all the space on my TV console. No, I'm not trying to watch that.
And I think also, if you're talking about content that's on your phone, it should be able to link immediately to a screenshot you put on Twitter or a video you put on Twitter or Instagram, et cetera. And this was the opposite of that. Basically, Quibi decided it was going to be its own internet that we had to find separately using a map.
So that is part of the problem that I always had with Quibi too, right? I mean, like, I was very happy to collect a check. I talked about this on Love It or Leave It last week. He did like game show, Matt and Dave's show. And we just had Nicole Richie on to talk about Nikki Fresh. You know, but Quibi really seemed like it was its own internet. You couldn't stream it at first, right? You couldn't screenshot it. You couldn't share memes. And for a service that was trying to be relevant, especially now, the fact that people couldn't share the content from it easily was one of the main reasons it was going to be doomed to fail.
You also, know? Like, it wanted to be relevant immediately. Like, they really wanted everyone to flock to a ton of content at once. So that really was an essential part of it. It wasn't like, oh, over 5 years, maybe eventually people will get around to, like, memeing this stuff.
Yeah.
And there should have been more things like game show, you know? There should have been stuff, like you just said, Aida, from queer creators, you know, like more people of color, you know. It was basically, here are a bunch of celebrities to try and lure you into this thing on your phone, and then the content with the celebrities wasn't that great, you know.
And you wasted
a bunch of money throwing it at everyone. It was, I guess, designed to be like while you were on the go, and then the pandemic hit, and so we were all just at home. I do watch some things on my phone, but like to log into this and feel like so completely disconnected from anything else, it highlights my problem with a lot of streaming services right now and why I'm enjoying something like Amazon. They're getting their accolades, I guess, for, you know, like Marvel's Mrs. Maisel. And then they had Mozart in the Jungle before when that got canceled. But I think it won a Golden Globe, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, again, that was the best newest series win,
right.
But yes. And we did give Bernadette Peters something to do randomly, so.
But then The Boys, which I was just talking about recently, right? You know, it reminds me of the early creation of Netflix when it was Orange is the New Black, when it was House of Cards, you know. We were starting out small with shows that were interesting, and you're watching them and you're talking about them, and then they can add in other things now. Currently, there's too much shit on Netflix for me to really navigate, but for Quibi, too, it dropped with like too many things for me to care about. If there was like one really good show on it, that we were all talking about. Maybe that would have made a difference, but they didn't do that. And they tried to launch and be too many things at once.
It was never a good omen that Quibi just sounds like some rich guy's daughter. his like fancy country club nickname for her. Have you met my daughter, Quibi? She goes to Kenyon College. Yeah.
And also, I remember like it was right when I was moving to LA where there had been a dragged out year long's worth of hype about Quibi. So everyone was kind of anticipating that it was going to be amazing. And you're right, Ira, like without it having a flagship show, with them trying to have like appeal to a younger generation with all of these older celebrities that I don't care what Reese Witherspoon is doing. I just frankly, I don't. So I just don't think that Jeffrey put a lot of thought into this as far as, you know, the younger
generation. You don't care about that white woman color coding her home? I love that people love Reese Witherspoon because I actually adore her as an actress. And she's very amicable as a celebrity. But I agree. I don't care about that aspect of Reese Witherspoon's life. this later stage mommy blogger mm-hmm. that she's become. I guess just to like wrap up the whole Quibi thing and start our show, talk about real things this week. They had an opportunity to give writers, producers a new place to create content. And I'm very sad for friends of ours, you know, whose shows were canceled now. Luckily, they will retain the rights to those things after a couple years so they can do whatever they want with them. Throw up game show on Netflix. Throw it up on YouTube if you want. Stream it on Twitch.
I mean, that is an interesting proposition, though, that they regain ownership of this stuff after 2 years. Like, a lot of this stuff is built for that moment, too. Like, was that a raw deal? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Most likely, I'll probably end up watching some of the documentaries, which I was going to watch last week because I was at lunch with a friend who was telling me that some of the docs were actually pretty good, like a LeBron one and a Donald Sterling one, and then literally it was canceled later that afternoon. But the docs, when they're put together as one whole thing, that I would probably revisit on another platform. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is.
R.I.P.
Goodbye.
You will be deeply mourned and quickly forgotten.
R.I.P. <R-I-P-B. laughs>
I'm sure I've made this joke before. It should be pronounced K-bye. Yeah.
It worked.
All right. We have a lot to get to in this episode. We are going to talk about Borat.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about the Chris Pratt nonsense from last week happened truly after we finished recording.
Oh, that's what, that's what your tweet was about. I was really racking my brain trying to figure out. You were mad.
I was mad. Of course, we're going to be talking about Amy Coney Barrett. We're going to talk about Jared Kushner. Unfortunately, we are going to have to talk about Kanye West again. And Adam Brody is joining us this week.
And he is in a movie I fucking love. I thought it was so funny and such a good little Latter Days Encyclopedia Brown romp. So I'm excited to talk about that.
He is in this new movie, The Kid Detective, so we will talk about that. And of course, you know I'm going to bring up the OC. We'll be right back. It's that time again for us to discuss the culture that we all consumed this week, but I'm sure we all collectively consumed the new Borat film. On Friday, Amazon released Borat Subsequent Movie Film Delivery of Prodigious Bribe to American Regime for Make Benefit Once Glorious Nation of Kazakhstan, a sequel to the 2006 original Borat film.
What a pithy title. I love how it's not long. Oh.
Very, Fiona Apple.
Yeah.
Shakespeare would hate the lack of brevity.
Exactly. Same. Well, Borat did have to fetch the bolt cutters for his daughter, so things had to happen.
Oh my God, last night I grabbed dinner on the way home and I overheard a conversation between two straight men. This is the way I want to be a journalist, just overhearing straight men and then telling the world what I heard. But somebody goes, oh, the girl who plays his daughter is really good. And the other guy goes, cool, is she hot? I just thought that was so funny. Like, even the vague idea of a woman in somewhere in the movie. Is she hot? Yeah. Cool, is she hot? I'm just going to say that all the time.
Speaking of the daughter you just mentioned, the scene that's been getting the most buzz, of course, is where Borat's daughter, Tutar, is interviewing Rudy Giuliani in a hotel room, and then it takes an alarming turn. He is shown reclining on his bed and reaching his hand into his pants.
Allegedly to move a microphone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that what he's calling it?
Mm-hmm. Is that what he calls his? It's a tiny microphone.
Now that we've seen it and we've heard everyone talking about it all week, what did that scene read to you as him doing that, or did it read to you as him adjusting his microphone?
It's satire, so I knew what they were going for. You know, I knew what the imagery was supposed to encapsulate, but I also knew that he wasn't doing nothing dirty with that girl, even though I wouldn't put it past him, is what I'm saying. Like, I think that Borat is so ridiculous, and it capitalizes on the absurd so much. It would be goofy for anyone to actually believe that what's happening in the scenes is actually happening.
I also think, like, okay, he definitely... Rudy Giuliani touches her lower back, but what occurs on screen is so quickly after an interview where he's surrounded by cameras and stuff, it just doesn't line up to me that he's trying to have sex with her. That said, he also is obliging to her in a condescending, gross way and a horrifying person. So I don't mean to say he's not, but weirdly, after you watch the movie, I don't think you're even really thinking of that scene.
Not at all.
No, no. I mean, I was thinking more of the Mike Pence scene. the Jews will not replace us cake.
That woman just took out that cake decorator and said, can you say it again slower so I can write it perfectly? Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird revisiting Borat in general, just because I remember when it came out in 2006, pre-iPhone era, so long ago, and it truly became everywhere. It became ubiquitous with straight bros, as you mentioned. You know, like, everyone was doing the Borat impersonation, which I will spare you all today.
My wife.
it went into the annals of, like, a Anchorman, you know, or like a Superbad, you know, like it was a film that everyone was fucking quoting all the time. And it's so interesting revisiting that and trying to get back into the mindset of what this is, because Borat and Bruno were a long time ago, you know, and I've gotten more used to Sacha Baron Cohen being an actor. We just talked about him last week in the Trial of Chicago 7, you know, and Sweeney Todd. I just think of him now as this funny actor who does tricks sometimes and is with Isla Fisher.
Yes. I used to think of him as a man who peaked in the music video for Music by Madonna as a L.E.G.
Oh, God, yes,
L.E.G.
Yes, L.E.G. Wow.
Back in the day when Madonna was obsessed with British comedians, which is kind of a motif, like, she was into Ricky Gervais for a while, and then she was on The Marriage Ref, anyway. But that's how I discovered who Sacha Baron Cohen was.
That's the best thing he's ever done, by the way, the Madonna music video.
Pure comedy. Oh, yeah.
14 years since that movie came out. I remember being a kid, and that was, you know, the most quotable thing. And it's almost exhausting. I feel like, what, that's like a Tron Legacy. That's a Dumb and Dumber. It's a long time between, you know, the original movie and the sequel. Sacha Baron Cohen is one of my favorite comedians in the way that he's able to, like, infiltrate real life situations and be funny first and be totally self-sacrificing in his comedy. Like, it's like, gives me Nathan Fielder, gives me Eric Andre. Like, he doesn't break as a comedian. Mm-hmm. He doesn't break at all. I love that. My only problem with the movie was I haven't heard an innovative Trump joke since 2017.
Totally.
Early
absolutely.
2017. No. Like, January. Like, everything. Like, when we were still in a collective shock about Trump, that's when it was funny. Now, there's nothing funny or humorous about the situation, not even in a reflective way. So I think premise-wise, I was just not on board with the movie.
Total. Also, I just want to say that, like, the jokes that were made about anybody in the Trump administration were super resistance mom-y. Like, the amount of time, like, Mike Pence being called vice pussy grabber. I mean, have you seen Twitter in the past 5 years? It's just not not a relevant joke. It was so down the line in that way. I mean, I guess maybe, I think what disappoints me is, obviously, Borat is an interesting way into discovering the horrors of certain human psyches. And so you'd think even all of the dialogue would be similarly incisive, but it just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. I think I would definitely agree that I'm past the point of needing to hear, like, jokes about Trump or his family. I mean, they're horrific. We've been enduring this for years, and now we're truly less than a week away from Election Day, and it feels like we are in Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit. Like, we're all just in hell or purgatory or whatever. Hell is these people. And the jokes aren't that funny to me, but he is hilarious. And he is one of my favorite comedians and writers and personalities. And there are so many hilarious jokes in the movie that have nothing to do with the Trump family and the administration that crack me up. Like, there's a random cutaway where he's talking about his daughter, how she could get married and get her own, like, wife cage, like this other woman in the village. It's just a quick cutaway to, like, her flashing them the peace sign from her own cage. And that cracked me up maybe the most in the film.
I get so mad. I get so mad at things like this because I will spend hours trying to study jokes and write jokes. And then he says US and A and I'm cackling. Like, I so disrespectful to my sense of humor.
Oh no, there's a moment when I think his daughter emerges in the film. She comes into a room he's already in and she goes, Daddy, why is the sky so low? And he goes, this is a room. Like, she doesn't understand the concept of being in an enclosed space. No, I mean, it's like, there are incredibly amusing moments in it. I also, by the way, rewatched Bruno recently. And you know what's weird is, like, I feel like that movie doesn't have too much of a legacy outside of maybe the Paula Abdul scene where she accidentally sits on somebody. But anyway, what I had forgotten about that movie was the main thing about Borat is that he is confusing. Like, when people are talking to him, like, they can't believe that he's actually saying the offensive thing, or he doesn't mean the offensive thing. And the problem with Bruno is it's too obviously perverted, I think. Like, you can't go that far with it. Whereas Borat, when you're constantly bewildering people, even with your grasp of the English language, there's lots more dimension and lots more ways to befuddle the person, your mark.
Well, as you know, it seemed like he had an itch to scratch with getting a new Borat film out. And it's out, you know? And aside from the Trump jokes, it annoyed Trump. I think maybe the funniest thing to come out of it was him saying, years ago, you know, he tried to scam me. That's a phony guy, and I don't find him funny.
Sorry.
But of course, it's so interesting to me because I find Trump very funny. He's an asshole, and he's garbage, but, like, sometimes his jokes are fucking funny, even if they're cruel. But it's so funny that someone like that doesn't get humor. Too, because maybe the funniest thing to me was last week during the debate when Biden refers to him as Abraham Lincoln, because Trump keeps being like, Abraham Lincoln, you know, the only president I could stack up to, you know, like when he's got the hat, whatever. I'm tired of hearing about fucking Abraham Lincoln. Okay, if you want to be Abraham Lincoln, go see some theater, Trump, please.
Halloween's coming
up. Do that. But go when Biden calls him Abraham Lincoln, he thinks that, like, Biden is like senile. He's like, he's calling me Abraham Lincoln. Like, I'm not Abraham Lincoln. And it's like, you spent years calling Elizabeth Warren Pocahontas, and you don't get what Biden was doing by calling you Abraham Lincoln. He's a fucking idiot. Anyway, what else did we all watch besides Borat? Did we get into anything?
Well, usually I don't pay attention to Twitter, like Netflix accounts or Hulu's Twitter, things like that. But I do follow Strong Black Lead in an attempt to, you know, try and find culture on that streaming site. But Strong Black Lead gave us a thread of Black creators and showrunners who got their start as writers on Black TV shows. And of course, these people that I had known already, but didn't actually go back into their catalog and try and figure out what was funny for Black people in, like, the 1990s and the 1980s. I'm sorry for saying that like it's the 1800s. So I went back.
The 1980s.
You know.
Lewis, you and I remember that, right?
Oh, yes, my God. Apples were 2 cents a piece. Yeah.
I went back and watched Prentice Penny's Uncorked, who he directed that film, and it was really, really good. And my friend Gil Ozeri is in it. He stars in it. He's a writer for Big Mouth as well. Very funny.
You know, I haven't seen that, and it's a film about a Black man who's very into wine, so I feel like it is my culture.
You were the understudy, Ira. You didn't know. Like, you were supposed to play that role. But... But yes, and you know, he also wrote for the Girlfriend's Writer's Room, which please nobody kill me. I just started watching recently. Didn't even know how Tracee Ellis Ross had a career. I just thought she was Diana Ross's daughter. Still, please nobody kill me. And just went back and really enjoyed her character and really enjoyed her acting. And I was like, okay, I get it.
It's an iconic TV show. It's actually Girlfriend's like starts out the gate like so fucking funny. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, like the last couple seasons are very hard to get through. And I don't know if I'll rewatch those when I get to the rewatch. But Girlfriends is chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. We need more shows like that on TV. More like hangout shows for black women.
Yeah, I think right now, and this is probably going to affect a lot of my writing, is I'm just interested in seeing vignettes of black people being black. Like, okay, I get it. Now we've spent so much time in Hollywood trying to show that black people are black, but can we just now show that black people are people? And they're just existing and hanging out and doing sometimes ridiculous and embarrassing things. So,
or their weave is trying to murder them. I don't know.
That's what we need.
Tracee Ellis Ross, I feel like, is one of our best award show hosts because she is both up for anything and still kind of wholesome. It's like that exact cross section of everybody wants to watch, but like she will do something potentially embarrassing for our amusement. Mm-hmm. And then two, her 73 questions is also really good. I just think she's like smart in an interesting way.
She is. I'm constantly always amazed by her that she's managed to make herself a fun, interesting cultural icon in a way that is completely separate from being Diana's daughter.
And by the way, she's always down to talk about Diana, though. She's like, all right, let's talk about Mahogany for 3 hours. And by the way, I'm ready.
Let's get her on here to talk about Mahogany. Tracy, please come on, keep it.
I have lots of questions about coding Tony Perkins as a gay supervillain, so get in here.
I think that what's great about Tracy, too, is that she was primed to be a personality. Like, I mean, she does have that naturally, too, but I love a daughter of a celebrity. I love, give me a Zoe Kravitz, give me a Tracee Ellis Ross. Like, I love them so much. I love that this is all they know. Performance is all they know, so they're great at it.
She does have that Rashida Jones sense of cool, if you will. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I was in New York for a couple weeks, as you all know, and I made it over to the Whitney Museum of American Art. And first of all, the concept of being in a museum in the midst of all this now was very weird.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was almost brought to tears being in it because every time I come to New York, you know, I love seeing like theater or something like that. And with the absence of theater and live performances, walking around a museum like felt like such a spiritual experience to me. They're also letting very small groups in, so it doesn't have that overpacked quality that you usually get when you do go to a museum and you like want to look at a painting or you want to read a placard, and there's just six people standing in front of it speaking in French, and you're like, can you tourists go away, please?
I'm laughing so much because your culture today is outside was briefly open for me. I got to go to a museum.
There are a lot of exhibits there that I would recommend. You know, like there's the Agnes Pelton exhibit. You know, there is a Colleen Smith exhibit. There's Around Day's End, something that shows downtown New York from the 70s to the 80s. But the thing that really hit me the most, there's a Vida Americana exhibit, and that is about Mexican art that underwent like a radical cultural transformation at the end of its revolution in 1920. It's a lot of Mexican mural art. And Lewis, I think you recall the time that we went to the museum in Mexico City, and it was just like all those murals on the wall. And I've always been inspired by and loved looking at those. And the exhibit shows that a lot of artists, particularly black artists around the Harlem Renaissance, were inspired by these murals because they were, you know, all about people fighting back against oppressive governments, you know, and the proletariat. And, you know, a lot of them were communists at the time. So there were people like Aaron Douglas, whose art I got to see, Hale Woodruff, a lot of black muralists I had no idea were inspired by Mexican muralists, and were sort of painting depictions of black people post-slavery, Reconstruction, from the essence of Mexican muralists. And that exhibit's through January 31st, so if you have a chance to see it, go and see it. And I guess I'm also a communist now. I don't know.
That's right, yeah.
Welcome.
Proletariat, save America. Did you have one last thing to say, Lewis, as we wrap up?
I did watch Adele on SNL, which it didn't make me doubt her comedic ability, but they didn't give her much in the way of comic things to do. And I did not like her breaking during that one sketch. We're done with that now. It was not that. It did not make it funnier.
The breaking. And I
don't, yeah. Don't tell me it was funnier because she broke. She did that on purpose to fool you.
That was a whole thing in SNL, particularly like the Jimmy Fallon era. You know, like him and Justin Timberlake would break all the time. And it was funny in the beginning. But yeah, I think I'm also a person who, when someone breaks, especially since we're just talking about how Borat is so funny, because
yeah.
Sacha Baron Cohen never breaks.
Right.
Commit to the joke.
No, right.
Yeah. I do think there's something cyclical about it, though, that like they recognize it's endearing when they mess up. They really do. But
right.
Then there was a Tina Fey sketch where they are self-referential about breaking, where they were like, people love when we break. And then in that moment, the picture frame in the back kind of gets knocked off of a nail. And they set that up deliberately. And it's like, okay, at this point, too many people are in on the fucking joke. Okay, just do the sketch. I was mad. But, you know, it'll come in cycles.
I'm from the school of Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon, and Sherry O'Terry. Like, you go for fucking broke with the joke. I want to see, like, the grit in your teeth, the anger in your eyes, yeah. as you are the most disgusting character on television at that moment. You know,
you better pop a blood vessel.
Also, she looked fucking great.
She looked beautiful.
I mean, I've always thought Adele looked great, but, like, the styling was on point in this episode to the point where she wasn't looking like she... it works in sales in Chicago.
At least she left her kente cloth at home.
Oh yeah, she wasn't funking for Jamaica this time. That's right.
She wasn't. She said Skepta who?
Not a glitter reference. All right, when we're back, Adam Brody. Keep It is brought to you by Barefoot Dreams. Lewis?
Yes?
When you see footprints in the sand, that was when I carried you in my Barefoot Dreams robe.
Now, is that a Leona Lewis song? No?
If you want to bring coziness into your life, you turn to Barefoot Dreams, especially now as the brand is celebrating their 30th anniversary. With those 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams celebrates being the originators of everyone's favorite luxe home blanket. And while many have attempted to duplicate their blankets, robes, and more, Barefoot Dreams' fabrication and quality cannot be replicated, so don't believe the dupes. Girl, this blanket is it.
I effing love this blanket. I'm thinking about it right now, and I want to jump in my bed, which is sponsored by something that we'll do another ad for momentarily. Get ready. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Jesus, get a life, Oprah. My God. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as their collection of ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are made with premium materials. Their products make the perfect gifts, too. I throw this thing on. I wear it like a shawl. I look exactly like Ellen Burstyn. And I am the coziest a human being can be. Because, by the way, it's still that time in Los Angeles where it's like pretty mild outside and then your apartment is cold. I can't explain it. I don't know things like basic science. For Keep It listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code KEEPIT15. Don't miss out on Barefoot Dreams soft, soothing fabrics that will bring luxury to your life.
You might know our guest today from, I don't know, old magazine covers taped to your childhood bedroom wall. I'm mostly just talking about mine. Or you might know him from last year's Ready or Not or Shazam and this year's Miss America. But now you're in a new film, The Kid Detective, and you're not only the star playing a washed-up adult who was once a kid detective, but you're also an executive producer of the film as well. Please welcome Adam Brody. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Adam, when I watched this movie, I had basically forgotten that you have a very specific deadpan humor that is constantly funny in the movie. I really enjoyed this film. When you read the script initially, were you like, I'm perfect for this. I can bring the deadpan to this that it needs.
Yes, I actually did. And this was a really long process, actually. I first met the director, who's now a very good buddy of mine, Canadian kid by the name of Evan Morgan. Not a kid anymore, but he was when I met him 7 years ago. And he pitched me the idea, and then a year later showed me the first act. So he kind of wrote it for me, or with me in mind. So it is sort of tailored to me. But that would only work if I liked his voice as much as he liked mine, which I do very much. I like his voice more than mine. Completed the script like 5 years ago, and then it was just a long journey to get it made. But I love this script, and so I always kept the faith. And every time I would read it, you know, I wouldn't read it for like a year and a half at a time, and I'd go back to it, and I would like it more, which is rare, which is a first, actually. Normally you read something and you like it and it's fresh, and then maybe you get the job, or maybe you go to work on it, and then all the surprises wear off, and then you start noticing the holes and what you want to kind of fill it with. And with this, it was deceptively rich. And it's a detective movie too, which by its nature is going to be a very like meticulous screenplay. You know, it's a very written genre. You can riff, but you know, the plot's got to be very sound. And also his language is so specific that I wouldn't dream of riffing in it, because it's so thought out and such a, you know, he's got a unique voice all his own. It kind of reminded me of a little bit of Wes Anderson, a little bit of Whit Stillman, a little bit of Coen Brothers almost. And I can't believe I'm here talking about it with you guys now, just because it was such a long journey.
Also, I just want to say the way it ends is much closer to like Veronica Mars than a movie like A Simple Favor that basically is... ends up being ridiculous on purpose. This like really hews to a mystery and comes to a logical, interesting conclusion. So I also want to congratulate the movie for that.
Thank you. I appreciate my friend Evan has such a dark sense of humor that I think I share that even in the most, this movie goes to a very dark place. And yet even so, it's still, it's not that it's ridiculous. It's taking everything seriously, but there's an awkwardness to all of it that is still kind of funny, even as it's hopefully devastating too. So yeah, he's got a sense of humor throughout, which I respond to.
That's what I was actually going to ask you, is because you, so in the movie you play a character by the name of Abe, who had a very, very strenuous and long career as a kid detective. And now, I mean, he reminds us he's solved hundreds of cases, 200 cases. But I wanted to ask you, how are you balancing out when you're acting as this role now as the adult who is kind of looking back and mourning and trying to find his way in the world again? How are you balancing like being a deadpan, but dark, having this dark sense of humor while still keeping it fun? Because this movie is very, very funny while also handling a murder case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, truthfully, me and Evan actually clashed a bit in a good way. I think we got to the best spot from it. But tonally, you know, it's not that I always was like, look, it's got to be funny. If it's not funny, the movie's dead. And then everything that happens will be gravy and icing on the cake, whatever food analogy you want to go with. But it lives or dies as a comedy. And he always had such a sense, not that I was hamming it up, I certainly wasn't. I mean, we're playing with like, you know, 10 different degrees, you know, degrees of 10 or 20, very small space, but still within that space, we're at two opposite ends. And he was always keenly aware of the end, the third act, and where we needed to go. And so to make sure to set it up for that and make sure that we, that third act would work, that we didn't get too light or silly. So yeah, we kind of butted heads in a good way and would, you know, I'd start here, he'd bring me down to here. I know this is just audio, so I'd start up, he'd bring me down, and then that last take we would finish in the middle and go, that's where it is. So yeah, just some healthy collaboration and conflict.
Well, speaking of your comedic timing, you know, and going from light to dark, I feel like I've talked about this on the show many times, and I feel like you've probably experienced a lot of people who have rediscovered the OC on HBO Max. I've been rewatching it with friends. We like watch 4 episodes a week and we're almost done now. And what's interesting to me is it starts out as like the satirical fun comedy and then it gets soapier through seasons 2 and 3. Mm-hmm, and those are a bit more dark. And then season 4 swings back to just like it's straight up comedy, you know? And so did you find working on that show a way to just sort of like explore how you're funny on TV? And like, do you have, I guess, fond memories of like finding out like, oh, you know, and this time, like I'm hamming it up, you know, other times, like I want to play something a little more muted.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time since I've seen it in any real capacity. About a good 6 years ago, 7 years ago is the last time I watched some of it. And I watched, showing it to someone, and we watched like the pilot or like half of the pilot and half of the last episode to just see, and different planets. I mean, different planets and in 4.5 years. So that show had a wild swing in such a quick time. It just went through so many variations. And but then again, we did 30 episodes the first season. So, I mean, in today's streaming world, that's like that show was on for 10 seasons or however you want to cut it up. And in the beginning, I would say that the pilot was pretty self-serious as I read it, you know, pretty straight melodrama. There was humor in there, but it was like, you know, humor was way down the list of what it seemed like it was sort of trying to do. Consequently, it was very easy, and I think I got more credit than I deserve for being like a comedian on it or something, when really I just got to walk into a melodramatic scene and just go like, you know, fart or whatever. and it just like really plays anything, you know, and the air is that heavy, anything light will just kind of catch. But instantly, Josh Schwartz, the creator, because he's very funny, and he, you know, connected with that, and then all of a sudden gave him ideas, and then all of a sudden he's writing a comedy, you know? And or if not a comedy, much, you know, instantly much more comedic, and for me, but then everyone finding out how everyone's funny, and it kind of influenced all of it. So that was just fun, and I think that first season, like, we really connected voice, you know, our voices merged wonderfully, and really hit a great stride. Ironically, I think that might have, not doomed is too strong a word, but maybe hurt it later on, because I do think in hindsight, what I remember is my stories, not that I was itching to do more melodrama, I'm not, and I never am, but I think what I remember of it is my storyline started to feel too sitcom-like, where Seth and Summer would get together and break up in the beginning of every episode and get back together almost every episode, like a sitcom. So there's no stakes, where it's like, really, they should probably be apart for a whole season or two while you want them to get back together. And it's these slow moving train wrecks and things like that. And instead, it was just like, it was so light that I just don't think it could hold an hour's of dramatic tension like it needed to every week.
I mean, you did get a very, very serious arc of being addicted to marijuana.
That was dark times. Yeah.
Doesn't get more gruesome as you know. Yes. Well, speaking of darkness, actually, when I think of your signature performances, I now always come back to Jennifer's Body, which is a movie that I feel like builds in legacy every year. There are certain movies where like more people discover them, or maybe like they thought it was one thing and then they go and finally see it and it turned out to be, you know, darker or funnier or weirder than they expected. How do you feel about your performance in that, looking back? Because that has to be one of the grislier moments in your career, character-wise.
Yeah. Not, you know, I mean, maybe I don't know what this says about me, but it wasn't hard to do or perform. It was very, you know, like, didn't weigh heavily on me. It was pretty comedic, too, is the other thing. As dark as it was, you know, it's also silly, and so I wasn't like carrying that around or anything. But I'm real proud of that movie. I loved it at the time. I remember seeing it before it came out and thinking it was awesome. And then I remember to throw what the shortly lived, and they were nice, very nice people, the shortly lived Fox Atomic, as Sue put it out. Don't even know if anyone will remember that.
I do, but, yes, that's right.
Okay, yeah. They couldn't have marketed it worse, in my opinion. As nice as they were, you know, here we have a feminist movie from a female screenwriter who newly minted, just won the Oscar, and they think, and a female director, and they think that that's, and Jason Reitman produced it, and they think that that's, it's like Jason Reitman and her follow up to Juno, and they think that's a drawback. And they bury all that. None of that they think is relevant. And the only thing relevant is Megan Fox, and they market it exclusively to boys. Also poorly, in my opinion. I mean, that movie's full of great imagery. That's kind of the thing the first thing I loved about it when I watched it was the images. And like how kind of iconic I thought they were. And they just didn't use any of them. And they just like sold a different movie to a different group. You know, if they marketed it in a cool way and embraced what it was and wanted to be and who made it, I don't know. And I can't say that still it would have done better or reviews would have been better. I'm not sure. I think it could have helped. But would that have totally changed the opinion? I don't know. But I'm happy now that it certainly has found its fans. And in some ways, it's even cooler, I guess, you know, to be a lost classic. or newly discovered classics. So that's great. But yeah, I don't know. It's a really good movie. I'm happy to be part of it. Also one that I'm due for a rewatch.
I'm always interested in how, especially someone like you, whose career we've been tracking since you were practically a fetus. Like, I feel like we've been watching you for a long time. I'm interested in how people like you transition from being, and still being, actors to having full daddy lives now. Like, you are with Leighton Meester, who I'm a big fan of, and now you're a father, and most recently you welcomed your second child, so congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
But how does that affect the projects you take, the things that you want to get involved in now, especially with two kids?
You know, there's a practical sense to it. It used to be fun to go travel and be gone for a bit. Wherever I was going, I'm interested to check out Baton Rouge for a month. That's fine. as well as the more glamorous places. But now... it's much more of a consideration, travel, and you got to take that into account. At the same time, there's something liberating about it too. Instead of being so precious, it's like I can look at it a little more practical. Like, well, got to make some money, and it's got to be logistically feasible. So I don't have to be so overly concerned with the art, even though I am internally. It's like I can kind of let some of that go because I have fun acting in most things I do, whether they're quality or not. The other thing is, and I've always felt this way, but even more so now, it's like, what are you putting out into the world, you know? And Hollywood and stories, I mean, they're just coded messages, and there are mythology, and there are, you know, morality plays, and our values, and whether you mean to or not, you know, most of the time when you don't mean to. I've always thought about that a lot and try to exert my influence as much as I can. I mean, I only have so much control, but I still think about that even more so now. And putting positive messages out there as much as I can.
Mm-hmm. Aside from the OC, you were also a part of another big cultural phenomenon at that exact same time. I forgot until I rewatched it recently that you were in Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
And me too.
We didn't forget. We did not forget.
Do you remember just like being in that film and then after that, like how that became such a huge moment because of like the Angelina and Brad of it all? And do people bring up you being in that film as often as they'd bring up like anything else that you've been in? Because it's so weird rewatching, like you're playing, you know, like a really funny character, but you bring such like an interesting levity to the role that I feel like no one else has in the movie. So it's really fun watching it back and seeing you in it.
That was an outcropping of the OC, actually. Doug Lyman directed the pilot of the OC, mm-hmm. and then he called me and asked if I just think they were like, didn't know what they wanted to do, and he had this idea to kind of cast against type. The character's name was Tank, I believe. And I don't know if they're... And so, of course, I was thrilled. I loved the script. You know, my only regret is not being a little better in it. Like, I kind of hate my performance, and I would do things differently. And there was room to, like, write my own stuff a little. It was one of those, they're figuring out a lot of it on the fly, and I didn't come up with the goods, in my opinion, at the time. And it's a shame because, I mean, I've done that. I've fallen short several times, but this is like an American classic movie now. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's always on TV at some, it's on, if you turn on TV right now, it's playing somewhere. And, you know, it's just like, it's cool. It's such an old, I really liked it. I also, again, haven't seen it in many, many years, but I really liked it certainly at the time. And also it's like, it's two movie stars being movie stars, and that actually doesn't happen as much anymore. You know, it's old fashioned in that way. You know, it's got staying power, at least in like the consciousness. And yeah, I wish I could be a little more, I'm proud to be in it. I wish I could be a little more proud of my performance. As for them two, yeah, I mean, it's like endless. It's such a money generator for tabloids that like any even little joke I've made about it over the years, like, gets picked up just because, you know, they're just insatiable for anyone to say anything about them. But I will say they're both very cool, very nice to me.
Also, I just want to say how rare it is to hear an actor be like, you know what, I didn't like myself in that movie, and I want to thank you for that.
I'll give you a list. I like myself in Jennifer's Body, but I have like, there's a couple things I cringe at.
Well, also, what's interesting is I think people forget if you're not directing the movie or producing the movie, you don't have a say in what take they used. And maybe you were doing something, you were reacting to something that wasn't on the screen or wasn't even put in the movie at the time or whatever.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What you're doing doesn't match up with what you thought was actually occurring in the scene.
Yeah, or it just doesn't read how you had read in your head. You know, it doesn't, it sounded away in your head and then you see it and that just didn't read at all. And yeah, I liken it a lot to playing music. I read it and I think, okay, this is how I think it sounds. I want to hit that note. It might take me even 3 takes to just do what I wanted to do on the first one and have it sound right to my ear. But then if I watch playback, that's a whole different experience. And did it even sound like I thought it sounded like? There's that question too.
Mm-hmm. You were also a part of a very hilarious quarantine moment for me, because you don't have an Instagram, and you used your wife's Instagram to talk to, I believe, Kiko Agena, who you were on Gilmore Girls with, to talk about voting. And I saw all the like fans jumping on, being like, where's Leighton?
Yeah, sure.
And I just had to bring that up because it was a very funny moment.
I enjoy that. I enjoy using her Instagram, but I also enjoy like inundating the few Twitter followers I have and any of her Instagram followers with like political stuff. Because I think like, yeah, Chuck and Blair forever, but also have you voted? And I like it.
You were both on Josh Schwartz shows. Like,
yeah.
Has he ever like tried to like be like, you know, maybe I should have you both in like a new show again?
I don't know that we would like. I was on her. She was on Single Parents for. Mm-hmm. She did a show, Single Parents, and I did a season of that, which was great fun. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've both had enough of the OC and Gossip Girl in our lives that I don't think we need to team up for some Avengers style with Schwartz. mega teen crossover. Then again. Maybe someday.
I just want to also shout out, by the way, the Leighton Meester one time years ago, and you cannot find this anywhere, covered Betty Davis eyes, and it was so good. And so like,
oh, really?
Yes, an update of the
I love
Kim
that
Carnes
song.
Yeah. Yes.
That song's rad.
Yeah. No, we don't have songs about like Spitfire sirens of the 30s anymore. We need this. This genre needs to be updated. And I want to thank her for that, though we can't get that song anywhere. So I'm actually just angry. I'm sorry to have done this.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know that. That's really cool. She does a great cover of Love Fool. By Cardigans.
Yes.
Oh. And that's around actually.
Okay, thank you. I'm thankful for that. Thank you for quieting my spirit. Yes.
Before you go too, you were in Ready or Not, which was one of mm-hmm. my favorite movies
cool.
last year. And that was, it felt like a fun mix of almost the Jennifer's Body quality, you know? Like you were funny in that, but then you were also an asshole, but then you weren't one. Did you have like a fun experience doing that and that in Jennifer's
Such
Body?
A
like,
blast.
Do you like horror a lot?
First of all, I had a blast doing that. Matt, Tyler, Chad, the directors and producer, just the whole cast. Like we all just had a great time, and it was a relatively quick shoot. Just lovely time, and we were all excited by the script too. We just thought it was clever and a blast, and then. Seeing the shot, seeing the dailies, we got more excited going, oh, this looks good too. This could be special. You know, do I like horror? I do, but I like Cronenberg kind of stuff. Mm. And I like all movies. I really like, I really like Midsommar and Hereditary was mind blowing. And so I do like all of it. The thing I dislike the most and I'll do one someday and have done in the past, but like are just the straight, we're only here to scare you. There's not a lot of either intellect or humor. And so I think it's, you know, I definitely gravitate more towards the Ready or Not in Jennifer's Body where there's some humor there too. Keeps me way more interested.
So you will not be in Saw 17.
I think those have an element of humor, you know, like more so than like Paranormal Activity or any of that stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. again, I'll do it, but like, or I guess they don't really have like, that's a little more found footage, but I don't know. The other, like The Conjuring doesn't interest me in the least, mm-hmm. even though if you want to offer me The Conjuring, I'll take it.
Well, I think a lot of the scariest characters have like a sense of humor because, and that's what makes them scary. They have a sensibility about what they do. Like Hannibal Lecter is scary because he's thought about it.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's certainly just more entertaining. I mean, Jack Nichols, Jack Torrance, Jack Nicholson, Shining, Hannibal Lecter, any of the Jokers. I mean, Freddy Krueger, terrifying, but yeah, kind of funny. It's just infinitely more interesting, or at least fun to play, I think.
Well, thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, it's been very weird watching your face every week, and now you're here. You should revisit season 4 sometime.
Really?
Because it's truly amongst people who are fans of the show, we all agree that season 1 is fantastic, but right, season 4 is a lot of people's favorite season, and personally,
really?
My favorite. Yeah, it shifts straight into, I think, because of
yeah,
how dark it got, you know, with Marissa's death. Season 4
yeah,
is just lighter, and it feels like
yeah,
it feels like an hour-long sitcom, but all the jokes are so much funnier.
Right. Confession, there's a scene where we got trapped in the mall in the middle of the second season.
Yeah.
And I felt, or not a scene, an episode, and I kind of was like, at the time, like, uh-oh, I wonder if the magic is gone after that episode. And before, I think it's like very magical. But
I was shocked.
But season 4, okay, if you say so.
No, truly. I think Autumn Reeser was a great sort of like breath of fresh air.
Oh, very much.
And by season 4, you realize Ben McKenzie is actually hilarious too.
Yes, yes. No question that like we had a parade of great guest stars that never stopped, and everyone got to be funnier and funnier as it went along. I do agree with that. I've never seen the second season like top to bottom, so, or the fourth season, I mean. Mm-hmm. So okay.
And it's shorter.
I know
Well, thank you again for being here, and The Kid Detective is a really fun movie, and it's in select theaters now, so people should go see it.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Last week, I guess we can attribute this to TV writer Amy Berg, who did the meme that we always see on Twitter, you know, the one gotta go meme, where you list a picture of four things, mm-hmm, and then you pick one thing that you think you would get rid of forever, you know, because you love the other three so much. And she did one with a photo of Chris Pine, Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans, and Chris Pratt, and wow, that was the absolute first time I've ever seen someone ask, who is your favorite Chris?
I mean, it's basically like, you know, when you go on Twitter and it says in the box, what are you doing? It may as well be, which Chris are you going to talk about right now? It's the same thing. Yeah.
The reason I found the entire Chris Pratt situation that we're going to get into so insane was the fact that this happens on Twitter every month. So this tweet is always being posted. It's always happening. There's always people saying they would get rid of Chris Pratt, and there's always someone who's like, Chris Pine's the best Chris, and then there's always someone who says, I thought that we replaced Chris Pratt with Chris Messina. Those things always happen. Always. So it was so hilarious to me that when this one happened, it created World War III. Mm-hmm. It created an Infinity War.
Yeah, the Avengers literally assembled. What? And also, first of all, the answer is not even Chris Pratt. The worst Hollywood Chris is Chris D'Elia, and I thought we all accepted that.
Oh, we're throwing him in that league? Wow. Yeah. Also, before we get into this, can I just say, Are people really this passionate about these four actors? I mean, this might be the shadiest thing I say all episode. They're the same distance away from an EGOT, all four of them, if you know what I'm saying. I understand they are in very popular movies. Great. I'm not sitting here like vivisecting their gifts for me all day. I just don't think it goes that deep or is that important to rank these four people. And you know the Chris I prefer is Christine McVie from Fleetwood Mac. There, I've contributed to the meme in a gay way. I did it.
I feel like the reason people always love Chris Pine is just because he cried once at that award show when Black shit was going on, and he always dresses well. And his quarantine looks have been sort of on point. And I miss running into him at Cafe Stella, where he would sometimes come show up wearing overalls.
I think he's also the most kind of mind his own business of the four, too, which appeals to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Love a white man who minds his own business. Chris Evans.
Chris Evans was like, come on, Chris Pratt. If you wanted them to like you, you should have had a dick scandal, bro. Like, that's what you should have did. That's
you should
how
have
I
a dick
did
scandal.
It.
You should have a gay brother. You should also be Captain America. A superhero that we actually care about. No one gives a fuck about Star-Lord. It's the worst part of the Guardians movies.
Yeah. And my favorite thing, though, was everyone's reactions. Like, I don't know why every Avenger was acting like Chris Pratt was on the brink of death and, like, just depression and destruction.
So I think the meme got reposted on, like, E! News' Instagram or something. And then Catherine Schwarzenegger, Chris Pratt's lover in Christ, comments, like, this is bullying. I think that we should be above this, etc. And then, I guess, much like Ellen, Catherine must have sent out a fucking group text, because then you had Robert Downey Jr., you had Zoe Saldana, you had Mark Ruffalo, everyone defending Chris Pratt on the internet like we were nailing him to that 20-foot cross he has in his yard.
I want to hear the meanest possible thing said about Chris Pratt. I just don't think of it as like that mean an internet pushback compared to other internet pushbacks. You know what I mean? Like, nobody's like assailing him for whatever, his looks or whatever. Is it all religion-based? Because
all we said was one had to go. We didn't say where he had to go. We didn't say he had to go to hell or die. Like,
we just said you ain't got to go home, but you got to get the hell up out of here.
That's it. Leave Hollywood. Like, I just don't know what your purpose is anymore. At this point, I have a hard time trusting devout Christians. Christians, I trust. Devout ones, dedication. What are you, Meryl Streep in Doubt? Relax yourself. And then, like, with Robert Downey Jr. being like, what a world, like, the people are casting stones at my brother.
The sinless are casting stones at my brother. Sinless in quotes. Like, who among us? And, like, listen, Robert, I get it.
King James, Timothy 1 and 2. Shut up.
You have a very rough past, Robert Downey Jr. You know, I remember when you had to leave Ally McBeal. That was devastating for me because I really liked you on the show. But, you know, Bon Jovi ended up being better.
Yeah. The Marvel Universe killed off Iron Man. They said you had to go. Like, that's sad. That's sad.
But the thing about this is that it had a Streisand effect. Almost, you know, we weren't really dragging Chris Pratt in the way that he got dragged when the celebrities started defending him in the midst of a pandemic, in the midst of people coming up in droves to early vote. And we were like waiting for the Supreme Court to confirm Amy Coney Barrett so she could strip away all our fucking rights. They hopped on the internet to say, stop being mean to Chris. And then when they did that, people were like, well, if you want to talk about being mean to Chris, we can talk about the fact that his church is because of in 2014, he told Esquire, like, he didn't really identify with any religious denomination, right? And then in 2019, he joined Zoe Church, which is, first of all, what a name for a church. And then
an adorable name.
If Zoe Saldana,
started.
Exactly. If she's not the priestess, I'm not going.
It's an evangelical church for the hot and cool in LA. But it also is a church that doesn't like LGBTQ people, which Ellen Page has pointed out on Twitter before. You know, so part of the problem was we weren't really talking about him like that. And then mm-hmm. when people said that we were being too mean to him, it was like, okay, well, let's talk about the fact that your church fucking hates queer people.
I mean, can we add to this with he also follows on Instagram people like Madison Cawthorn and
Ben Shapiro.
Yeah, right-wing meme factory PragerU. And so, like, you don't want us to drag you? Like, the internet's right there. We can click two tabs in and see you're onto these fucking people. So it turns out we're not stupid. And we're onto your, like, weird actual fixation on discriminatory people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, Mark Ruffalo tweeted that I know him personally, and instead of casting aspersions, look at how he lives his life. He is just not overtly political as a rule. I don't know how you get more overtly political than following PragerU and people from Turning Point USA, which are literal white nationalist organizations.
Yeah.
Like, the memes aren't that funny where you're just like, oh, I didn't notice that they were talking about ethnic cleansing.
I didn't like especially that, like, did Chris, like, go to the Avengers group chat and was like, can you guys please bail me out? Because Zoe Saldana had no
business
tweeting.
It had to be like when people were defending Ellen.
Yeah.
Like, there was a group chat, and I noticed who also didn't jump in to defend him. I also noticed that these people had nothing to say when Brie Larson was getting a shit ton of misogynistic hate spewed at her on the internet from men just because she was Captain Marvel.
Great point. Love that point.
So, you know, you pick and choose. We're defending Chris Pratt today, I guess, because he's not rich enough, and he's not hot enough, and he's not white enough.
Chris Pratt. I miss when you were fat. I really do.
Also, I'll say it, Parks and Recreation, a little too chipper for me. Doesn't really run with my comedic stylings.
You know, I mean, we just talked to Adam Brody, you know. He was on the OC in season 4. He's fucking hilarious, and he has great comic timing early in his career, that and with Parks and Rec, too. But because of shit like this, because of the church connection, because of the split from Anna Faris, sweet beloved house bunny.
Yeah, that's where you fucked up, Chris.
You know, like, now we're just sort of like, oh, maybe you're a little odious.
Yeah.
And maybe also you're too fucking rich and busy to be wondering about people making memes about you on the internet. Maybe mm-hmm. that's my biggest takeaway from this. How did you even find this girl, Catherine? Shouldn't you have been like passing around the collection plate?
Also, Catherine addressing the entire internet and calling out their tone makes me think she's a pretty passive participant in the internet, period. Like, maybe she isn't aware of the more insidious, horrible things happening on Twitter at any given moment.
Yeah, if this is the worst thing that you're seeing happening on the internet, if this is the bullying that you need to call out, maybe you should join Melania's task force. All right.
Also, you just brought up Adam Brody. Isn't Chris Pratt also for a split second in Jennifer's body? Wow, they have a history together. It sort of feels like he was edited out of Jennifer's body or something. I wonder what was up with that. And we're back, and here's the moment you've all been waiting for, my voting plan. If you've been hinging on me and what I am doing to vote, I am so sorry for you, but it is an extremely dynamic experience, and I will share it with you. I had planned on going in person because I have a disease where I like being at places like crowded airports or malls and just being around the noise and commotion of a given moment. But as you know, like Ira, I moved recently and I was cleaning out my old mail and I ran into my ballot. And as I discovered my ballot, Aquarius, Let the Sunshine In by Fifth Dimension started playing in my AirPods. And I'm not somebody who, shall we say, believes in signs. But I seized that moment. I literally stopped moving stuff from my apartment and decided, I'm just going to go and submit this right now. So my recommendation is, let's not wait to do it in person. Look at that ballot. Realize it takes 2 seconds to fill out. I assume we all have our convictions at this point. Let us stay convicted to them and drop it right off. I got some great content out of it, which you can use again on election day. So it's double content. I'm thinking ahead for you. Here are some things I was particularly excited to vote for, or one thing in particular, Prop 17, which is a cool one. Prop 17 allows people on parole in California to vote and parolees to run for office if they're registered to vote and haven't been convicted of perjury or bribery, which admittedly are my two favorite crimes. California now prohibits state prisoners and parolees from voting. People serving their sentences in county jails can vote unless they're transferring to a state or federal prison or they're serving time for a parole violation. 16 other states in the District of Columbia allow people to vote once they've finished their prison sentences. And Vermont and Maine let people vote while still in prison. So support for this has been led by Kamala Harris. Heard of her? Only 3% of the population say her first name correctly. So if you rank amongst them, congratulations. The ACLU also is an advocate for this, League of Women Voters in California. It's extremely popular for progressives across the board. Right now, who I wish I could vote for, Doug Jones. He's the current senator from Alabama running for his full term. He won the 2017 special election for Jeff Sessions' seat in Alabama. Think about Jeff Sessions for a couple seconds. Okay, there should be a rage running through your spine. Great. Defeating one of the great villains of all time, Roy Moore, alleged child molester. You remember that story, right? He worked at a steel mill like his grandfather before law school. Suddenly we're in a Loretta Lynn song. As a U.S. attorney, he prosecuted members of the KKK who bombed a black church in Birmingham and a bomber who attacked an abortion clinic. His opponent, Tommy Tuberville, was a former Auburn football coach and essentially a mini Trump. The large Trump, as you know, is enough. He supports protections for transgender students and transgender troops, which is something apparently that still needs to be said out loud. He's pushing to close the homework gap by ensuring that every Alabama household has access to high-speed internet. The homework gap, cute term. And he introduced two bills to address the disproportionate maternal and infant mortality rates among black women and their babies, the MOM Act and CARE Act. He's endorsed by Kamala Harris, Amy Klobuchar, Stacey Abrams. That's three people with the smartest lapels. So go to DougJones.com to contribute.
And we know that a lot of you have already voted, which is amazing, but your job ain't over yet. Now we have to make sure that everyone else votes. And how do we do that? It's very easy. Just take a few minutes out of your day, minutes that we'd otherwise be spending anxious about polls or scrolling through Twitter aimlessly or whatever. Let's get out the vote. Go to votesaveamerica.com/volunteer to find all your options to get involved between now and Election Day. And now it's time for Keep It. And we're back for our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Once again, fuck everybody.
I know.
And like, it's not even something as dumb as fucking Tiffany Trump this week. Like, a lot of people should just like go directly to hell and not collect $200.
Yeah. I'll start by saying I hate when my Keep Its are political only because other people are, shall we say, more eloquent about this. You need me to talk about whatever, the 1979 Oscars. That's what we should be restoring our own sanity by getting into our niche obsessions again and again. But unfortunately, the other day, I was acquainted with Amy Coney Barrett's resume. And I'm aware she was underqualified anyway. I know they've rushed her through. I know Mitch McConnell, who at the moment looks like a grape gangrene Kool-Aid man, is like gutting to throw her through the system, whatever.
Bitch.
MSNBC put up her experience, and I'm simply blown away. Here we go. 2 years in private practice, never tried a case, never argued an appeal, never argued before the Supreme Court. Most private work involves civil cases and criminal cases. 15 years teaching experience. Never served as a judge until 2017. 70 words per minute, PowerPoint, Excel, and Word? Like, what? The objective lack of experience, the objective shittiness of this is just unfathomable. And I don't know what to say other than it is excruciating what happened this week that she is on the Supreme Court. What else is there to be said about it? I feel horrible. Can we just get into our feelings? I feel like shit. That's it.
I compared her to old girl Abigail Fisher, who was suing for racial discrimination. She hated affirmative action so she could get into college. Remember that girl?
Yeah. Oh, right.
This is like her all grown up. It is honestly embarrassing to me, the concept of accepting a job, accepting this nomination, getting on the fucking Supreme Court in the midst of a pandemic when like 225,000 people and counting are dead, when we're in the middle of an election and like over 60 million people have voted already, and you are so underqualified, and it's being called the darkest day in history, you getting on the Supreme Court, and people keep talking about how like underhanded the Republicans had to be to get you on the court too. Like, I would be fucking embarrassed. And the fact that she isn't makes her even more despicable. Like, standing there, like, you know, whimsical. And, like, I remember during her hearing, I forget which, like, fucking old white man senator asked her, who does the laundry at your house? Like, shut the fuck up.
I hate that the thought goes into my mind to wonder if they have shame at all, just because it's not a productive thought. Whatever. They have shame, they don't have shame, they're not going to show it. And I don't know why it would be satisfying to me one way or the other if they did. But it is just preoccupying how unbelievably bad this is, and what a joke she is, and what a troll selection she is. So, sorry about that. It's fall. I would normally do my little fall sucks or hocus pocus sucks thing right now. But you know what sucks? Most other things at the moment. So yeah. I'll get back to that soon. But sorry, guys.
You know, the only good thing about this is that the voices we really need on the left right now, like AOC, you know, and like Ed Markey, like Brian Schatz, like the people who actually got up there and were like, fuck this. This is illegitimate. Ed Markey was like, I fell out when he said to Amy Barrett, who is an originalist, quote unquote originalist, these people who interpret the Constitution as it was originally conceived, you know, when niggas were slaves, when women didn't have rights, couldn't even vote, is bullshit. And he was like, to her, LGBT stands for let's go back in time. I was like, Marky got bars. and AOC's like, expand the court. I'm like, yes, bitch, let's expand the court. New Supreme Court, who dis? We're expanded. I'm like, I don't even want any of this hemming and hawing bullshit anymore from people who are like, oh, you know, like we really shouldn't play the games that they play. Like Mitch McConnell is on the Senate floor talking about how the Democrats are mad because they didn't win an election. Like they weren't successful, and now we get to do whatever we want to do. First of all, you bitches don't even win elections. You stole the 2000 election. You stole Trump winning too. You've been packing courts all over the fucking United States during Trump's presidency. Like, you're grifters and you're trash. And I can't wait till we vote every single fucking one of them out because they're all evil.
Yeah.
Evil.
The hypocrisy from the GOP is like their guarantee that they're not going to have a Supreme Court justice come in a week before the fucking election when Obama was trying to get Merrick Garland in. RIP Merrick Garland. He's not dead, but we're all about to be without him. So, like, oh, you know, I hate to be dismal, but I'm going to have to just put out an open casting call for anyone who wants to be my wife right now, because we can elope, baby girl, like while we still have a chance before Amy Cucamonga like stops us. So I'm just saying, like, hit me up.
Anyone DMs in Amsterdam who wants to get married to me, I would love to move there. My DMs are open on Instagram. Instagram, not Twitter. Got to see what you look like. But I won't be that discerning. Okay. No.
Also, Aida just said Cucamonga, which reminds me of the movie Camp Cucamonga, which has a theme song that once you hear it is in your head for the rest of your life, and now I can't stop thinking about it. So you've cursed me again, just like Amy Coney Barrett.
Sorry. Have a good day.
I know that we've made many of the Coney Island jokes, but when I think of Coney Island, I think of the sequel to Phantom of the Opera, Love Never Dies, which is a horrible musical. Amy Coney Barrett is the love never dies of human beings.
Speaking of things never dying, Kanye West. So, my keep it this week.
Lewis had to take off after that. So,
yeah. You want to have a job. You want to make money and shit. Get out of here.
It's just me and you, Aida. So,
okay.
Let's talk about this nigga that I know. you're going to bring up. the last few minutes of this show are going to be some black people shit. So, go ahead.
Even before the pandemic, Kanye was a house nigga. Let me just say. And I shouldn't say that because it's going to be on the route. Like, Aida Osman called Kanye West a house nigga. Like, I should watch myself, but whatever.
Actually, Aida, if you Google Ira Ben Carson, I fully got written up in some, like, right-wing newspaper once when Ben was talking about how he was thinking that he was going to have a role in the Trump administration after
that
Trump
poor man.
Won. I tweeted, House or Field?
Wow, and then they still gave him urban development. So, like, wait, that's what he does, right? What does that nigga do? Anyway, you know how disrespectful it is? They put the black man in the only urban department. Anywho.
They put him in HUD.
They said, okay, so Kanye West showed up on Joe Rogan to do what he calls an interview. The mental fucking gymnastics I had to do to understand what this man calls quote unquote English. Like, after watching that, I'm sponsored by Excedrin. My liver does not thank me. Like, I'm in so much fucking pain. There goes Kanye, you know, in his little oversized sweatshirt, which is just a muumuu, nigga. Call it a muumuu. You in an earth tone sleep shirt is what you're wearing. And you in a dusty
Yeezy
gown.
Muumuus. Yeezy muumuus.
Yes. trying to have opinions. And don't get me wrong. Like, Kanye really entertains me. I always be on here harping about how much he irritates me. But I appreciate his musings in the way that, like, I like to watch my drunk uncle talk, like, wax poetic after, like, a week of night school. You know what I mean? yeah, you're right, Unc. You are a genius with that Psych 101 information. Read me. Psychoanalyze me. That's, like, exactly the type of energy that Kanye has. And I'm so tired of Kanye thinking that he's a revolutionary. Like, nigga, you make foam shoes. You make Crocs for robots, bro. He has all of these things to say about how black people shouldn't be happy about Black History Month. Like, okay, 2004 ass read about the world. Like, we get it. It's the shortest month of the year. It's in the dead of winter. It's the month where people celebrate love. Like, yuck. Like, we are given crumbs, and we know that. You're not being transformative by telling us that, by telling us there's fluoride in the toothpaste. Okay, it's just so frustrating. And Kanye, like, recently in that interview, he reveals that the only reason he registered so late for his presidential bid was because he had COVID. Mm. Nigga, did you have COVID for 8 months? Like, a year and a half? What was going on? You were patient zero? And a lot of this anger is really spilling over because I'm super mad about what he said about abortion. And, like, as we recall, when Kanye was on his presidential campaign and he came out to talk about how he almost killed his daughter and he started crying because he probably tried to encourage Kim to get an abortion. And then he goes on to talk about how the abortion opinion is in the hands of 31 to 37 year old men who don't want to live a lifestyle because America has coaxed them into believing that they need to be capitalists and all of that. And they encourage their partners to get abortions. And now he's super Christian again. And he's pro-life. I mean, he's always been Christian, but now he's openly pro-life. And by virtue of that, anti-abortion. And it's like, you don't get to talk about abortion without talking about women's bodies. And in this 2.5 hour interview, Kanye West says a million words and Joe Rogan says like six of them because Kanye does that thing where he just thinks he's talking in colors and saying all of these beautiful lyrical things. And it's like, nigga, what you're doing is you're not making sense. Like, you're not making any sense. So frustrating. And Kanye, he does say some interesting things. Like, he's working on a sustainable monastery. He's working on sustainable food. He had a few good talking points. But overall, it's like, bro, what is happening? What is happening?
You know, I was up in New York minding my business. And then I kept seeing news reports of Kanye, Joe Rogan experience. And I was like, that's what I'm not going to do. I have never listened to the Joe Rogan experience anyway. I certainly wasn't going to start with this episode. And I just do not get this legitimization of Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
The only appreciation I have about Joe Rogan is his ability to, be interested in what everyone's saying. He's a good interviewer. And that is the extent of what I like about Joe Rogan. And, you know, he got me, like, caring about kettlebells and shit. So it's, like, a very interesting – he's fun to listen to. But – And also just for talking points of like pop in pop culture, what's happening is usually some Joe Rogan interview with, you know, Elon Musk smoking weed, some random shit like that. So that's the only reason I think I keep him in the repertoire of things that I am entertained by.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I don't need to hear that man talk.
We certainly do not.
Okay, Ira, Ira, Ira. What is your keep it?
My keep it is to this meerkat looking bitch, Jared Kushner, who had the nerve to go on Fox this week and talk about, you know, like how much his father-in-law cares about black people, right? You know, they're always like, Trump loves y'all. He loves the blacks. This time, however, Jared Kushner said he can't want more for black people than black people want for themselves. So basically he was like, niggas is lazy. You got to get like me, bitch, i.e., and Jared Kushner, a rich kid whose parents donated money to like Cornell and Princeton and also Harvard to get him up in there. You know, Jared Kushner, slumlord Jared Kushner, Jared Kushner, who has no fucking business being at doing anything in the White House and is only there because he's booed up with Ivanka. Like, you have the nerve to tell black people that they are lazy? What the fuck do you do? What does he do? I do not know what this man does besides evict people from his dilapidated houses.
And comb those three hairs down.
Like, remember when we didn't used to hear him speak and now we hear him speak? And I'm like, the voice would make my ears bleed. I'm like, where are Mulder and Scully to find out what's going on with that voice? I don't have much more to say about this dumb bitch, but just like, fuck you and your lack of qualifications coming out here trying to tell black people that we're lazy.
It's such a like superficial view of black people to not understand the depth of the, you know, subjugation and marginalization that we've experienced. And also, yeah, like you're saying, his mom is a free and not caught Felicity Huffman, pretty much, in the way that, you know, you've had all these things set up for you and you get to just look like that and, you know, critique free and, you know, objectivity free.
His dad went to prison for 18 counts of tax evasion, illegal campaign contributions, and witness tampering. And also, he hired a prostitute to sleep with his sister's husband and videotape the encounter and then sent it to her. He is vile. This family is vile, and you think of like any black person trying to make it ahead if their father went to jail the way his did. Like, they still have their money, they still have their stature in New York City. You know, you're not operating on the same level that black people are operating on. And one, every time we try to build some shit, like black people just need to like pull themselves up by the bootstraps, you know, like make some money, like do some hard work. I'm sorry, every time we built shit, y'all burnt it down. Okay, Black Wall Street, you know, like look it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time black people try to do anything, any success in any town, post-slavery, post-reconstruction, white people would come in, they would burn it down, they would lynch black people, they would destroy their businesses. So how the fuck are you supposed to be prosperous in American society when they never even gave us that fucking much, you know? Talking about reparations, if we had that shit, which is basically what you have because it's money that you inherited from doing nothing,
mm-hmm.
maybe we'd be on an even playing field. And let's not talk about the fact that black culture is the dominant culture. Music, fashion, literature, anything. You know, it's like they take our words, they take our vibes, they take what we're dropping, and then they mix it up and put a like fucking white wig on it. It's just like, bring it on.
Yeah. They, you take, know? They take like what we're done with. They take what literally expired black culture and then make it, you know, the global phenomenon. And he called George Floyd's death the George Floyd situation while he was on Fox. And it's
like we cried fake tears over George Floyd.
Yeah. This shit makes me sad. This shit's not even fun.
Every time I try and think about who I hate the most in the Trump administration, I'm like, do I hate Don Jr.? He's probably a coke addict, so no.
Mm-hmm.
do I hate Eric? I mean, he looks himself in the mirror and probably hates himself.
Yeah.
Because he looks like a 12th generation British royal. Melania, whatever. We never see the real Melania half the time anyway.
She's been swapped out for a clone.
No,
for
he's a stupid fool. He's a dunce. It's probably Jared. Jared or Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller is just at least like lurks in the shadows, mostly to hide his hairline and does his evil, you know, like whispering into Trump's ear. Kushner is trying to be front and center, acting like he's doing some shit. Fuck him. Well, that's our show.
Yeah, good times. Good times today. Today was fun.
What a great week.
I know.
Election Day is next week, and we have a treat for y'all. We are dropping the episode early.
Ooh. Look at that. Yeah. That's a gift. Yeah. That's us trying to make your life better. Sorry about Amy Coco booty hole.
Not the Coco booty hole. You will get it election day. Next week's episode of Keep It. It'll drop early for you to vibe with while you're voting.
Yeah.
Helping people vote or just something to distract you from staring at the news and going slowly insane like Ellen Burstyn in Requiem Room for a Dream.
Yeah, take care of yourself, please.
Yes.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. And thank you again to Adam Brody for being here. We'll see you next week. Keep It is a production of Crooked Media. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our editor is Bill Lance, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Our digital team is Nadine Melkonian and Milo Kim. Thank you to Brian Sebel for production support every week.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.